Stu Does America.
Quick message to all of our friends protesting at college campuses across America. Learn, then protest. The order is important. And it's a timeless message that's never been more relevant than today. You can get your mug or your t-shirt with that slogan, learn, then protest. The order is important, up at learnthenprotest.com. Use the code STU10. You'll get 10% off your entire order. Also, check out YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Like and comment on the videos and hit the bell for notifications. Pat Gray is going to be here to react to the biggest foreigner news of the year. And that has nothing to do with illegal immigration. We'll get into that. Afro Man is making waves in the music industry with his loving tribute to Hunter Biden. We'll, for some reason, take a listen to that. But we'll start by doing Christie's confession. Ah, yes, we are in like peak political, like a stretch here from now to the we have the conventions coming up in a few months. We are going to get a VP nominee at some point here on the Trump side of the ticket. And it'll be interesting to see who that might be. Now, I wanted to start with that because Axios had a list of candidates. This came out, I don't know, a month ago or so. And it's interesting. Of course, this is not definitive. It could be someone who's not on this list. But this is who they reported about a month ago. And many of these people have been basically fully crossed off at this point. Here's the list. This is what it looks like. Let me give you some that have been crossed off. Vivek Ramaswamy, Trump already said, was out of the running. Carrie Lake is now running for Senate. So she's out of the running, most likely. Katie Britt had a really rough, post State of the Union response. So she seems like she's not going to be there. I mean, Tulsi Gabbard, you know, there's a lot to like about Tulsi, but also she was a, you know, she was running a campaign for Bernie Sanders when Donald Trump was running for president. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me, even though I like Tulsi generally. Sarah Huckabee Sanders seemingly could be a candidate that you'd think about, but some rumors that she took a long time to endorse Donald Trump, he was not appreciative of that in the primary. Greg Abbott, I don't know. I don't see Greg Abbott really as someone who Donald Trump would pick. You know, I could be wrong on that. It kind of leaves you with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that I have that are still on the ticket. You got Tim Scott and Ben Carson. They're kind of two different molds here. One is sort of a quiet, solid, do no harm type, right? Like Mike Pence was that type, right? You bring somebody in, he doesn't really stand out. He's solid, though. He'll do what he has to do. He'll go on TV. He'll talk and try to add maybe some refinement to what Donald Trump might say. Might win with a help with a key constituent group. That's sort of solid and stay there type of person. Not going to excite anybody. Not going to throw anybody over the edge. Be like, oh, my gosh, this is the greatest ever. Or this is the worst ever. Just someone who kind of hangs around and is solid. And you put in that group Tim Scott and Ben Carson. And then there's sort of the attack dog approach where you have J.D. Vance, Elise Stefanik. You saw her doing a really good job in the with the campaign or the campus president situation. Byron Donalds, maybe. I mean, he's not as well known, but maybe someone who fits into that more attack dog, aggressive person going to go on TV. Ramaswamy would fit in that group as well, though he's already been eliminated by President Trump. And then you have Kristi Noem, who fits in much more into the do no harm, solid type of person who's not going to make lots of noise, not going to ruin your candidacy, not going to blow anything up, not going to be in the headlines, just going to be someone who's there, who can go on TV, add some credibility. Do you see where this is going after this weekend? I don't know that you could put Kristi Noem in that category anymore. And this is the issue for her as you look at this group. It depends, of course, on who Donald Trump wants, but one of the pitches was, and he always said this about so many different categories of person, is someone right out of central casting. And, you know, Kristi Noem has a new book coming out, and here she is on the cover. I mean, right out of central casting, right? She looks great on the cover. No Going Back is the name of it. The truth on what's wrong with politics and how we move America forward. Now, if you didn't hear what happened this weekend, let's go through it. This is a leak of something from the book. So this is not opposition research, not someone digging up some negative story about her. This is something she put in her own book. It's called, the title is Trump VP Contender Kristi Noem Writes of Killing Dog and Goat in new book. Before we go into all the analysis on this, let me just read this to you so you know if you didn't hear the exact story. And of course, this is important largely because we're talking about the vice presidency of the United States. And that's really what this is about. We'll get into it in a second. Here's the story. She includes her story about the ill-fated Cricket. She says, this is the name of her dog, to illustrate her willingness in politics as well in South Dakota life to do anything difficult, messy, and ugly if it needs to be done. By taking Cricket on a pheasant hunt with older dogs, Noam says, she had hoped to calm the young dog down and begin to teach her how to behave. Unfortunately, Cricket ruined the hunt, going out of her mind with excitement, chasing all the birds and having the time of her life. Now, that sounds like a 14-month-old dog. Like, if you take him out, there's a bunch of birds around, probably going to chase him. I have a young dog myself, when it basically sits outside under trees and looks at squirrels the entire time, hoping one of them will fall to the ground. That's basically her entire job. Okay, Noam describes calling Cricket, then using an electronic collar to attempt to bring her under control. Nothing worked. Then on the way home after the hunt, as Noam stopped to talk to a local family, Cricket escaped Noam's truck and attacked the family's chickens, grabbing one chicken at a time, crunching it to death with one bite, and then dropping it to attack another. Cricket, the untrainable dog, Noam writes, behaved like a trained assassin. Now, look, I admit I have no connection to, I don't know, anything difficult in my life. I grew up in Connecticut. You know, I didn't have to do farm life. I never had chickens on my property. I don't know. I mean, it seems like that would be pretty annoying if you own chickens that a dog just came in and attacked your chickens. It seems also like the owner of the dog should probably make sure the dog doesn't escape the truck, right? Like, that's kind of part of your job, right? As a dog owner, I have had dogs that run around and they can do things, right? Like, they can get into stuff and you got to keep them under control. That's an important part of owning a dog. Now, Noam eventually grabbed Cricket, she says. The dog whipped around to bite me. Then, as the chicken's owner wept, Noam repeatedly apologized, wrote the shocked family a check for the price that they asked, and helped them dispose of the carcasses, littering the scene of the crime. Seems like a Netflix documentary. But through it all, Noam says Cricket was the picture of pure joy. Now, that's tough to hear, right? Like, a little dog doesn't know what's going on. Like, the dog is happy, thinks it's doing its job. Like, this is an animal, right? Animals do these things. We had a situation at our house this past weekend where my wife let the dogs out. They saw a squirrel and went after the squirrel. Now, 99.9% of the time, dogs don't catch the squirrels. Squirrels are pretty fast, pretty quick. They got some jukes in them. I mean, they're breaking ankles all over the place normally. This particular one, I don't know if it was a veteran squirrel, maybe didn't have the quickness used to have, but did not get away. And my dog, a little dog, Ivy, she's a couple years old, caught the squirrel and played with it like it was a rag doll. Okay, that's what happens. Animals are animals. They do these things. Now, this was not my wife's favorite moment of all time. She screamed at the dog to drop the dog, but the dog looked back at her like, what are you talking about? I succeeded, stupid. I caught the squirrel. Why are you yelling at me to drop the squirrel? I caught the squirrel. That's what animals do. We all understand that. It's expected out of an animal in that particular situation. But Christy, not exactly a fan of the dog. She says, I hated that dog, Noam writes, adding that Cricket had proved herself untrainable. I mean, 14 months, really? Is that a conclusion you can come to? Dangerous to anyone she came in contact with and less than worthless as a hunting dog. At that moment, Noam says, I realized I had to put her down. Noam, who also represented her state in Congress for 8 years, got her gun, then led Cricket to a gravel pit. It was not a pleasant job, she writes, but it had to be done. And after it was over, I realized another unpleasant job needed to be done. Now, look, it's not something that probably you would do or I would do. Some people, though, are like, I live in a farm and these things have to happen from time to time. I mean, you know, life is different. There are different cultures out there, certainly. Christy came from a very different culture, if that was the answer to that particular equation for her. But she went on. She said her family, she writes, also owned a male goat that was nasty and mean because it had not been castrated. Furthermore, the goat smelled disgusting, musky, and rancid and loved to chase Noam's children, knocking them down and ruining their clothes. Noam decided to kill the unnamed goat the same way she had just killed Cricket the dog. But though she dragged him to the gravel pit, the goat jumped as she shot and therefore survived the wound. Noam went back to her truck, retrieved another shell, then hurried back to the gravel pit and put him down. I remind you, this is not opposition research from another campaign. You know, it's not J.D. Vance leaking something bad about Noam so that Noam, you know, it's not that. This is from her own book. This is a book story she's telling. At that point, Noam writes, she realized that the construction crew had watched her kill both animals. It must have been a weird moment. The startled worker swiftly got back to work, she writes, only for a school bus to arrive and drop off Noam's children. Kennedy, I guess one of her children, looked around confused. Noam writes, or I guess her daughter, who asked, hey, where's Cricket? That is, again, a devastating ending to that story. Quite sad. Also, again, included in her own book that she wrote. In the book, however, she sums up her story about Cricket and the dog, an unnamed castrated goat, as well what may prove a contender for greatest understatement of an election year. I guess if I were a better politician, I wouldn't tell the story here. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's she's being honest. But she's right. If she was a better politician, she wouldn't be telling the story here. I don't understand how it's a good idea in any way to put that story out there when no one else apparently knew about it. But I will say, as someone, you know, who's worked on these books behind the scenes, if you're writing a book about your life, a lot of times, you know, you are constantly encouraged to come up with some sort of story. Like, they don't want you to write the most boring book possible where you look good in every story. The people who are publishing the book often will kind of come to you and be like, hey, do you have any tension? Is there anything here? I mean, you think about a documentary about someone you watch on TV. If it's all just fluff, you kind of have no interest in it. You want to have those moments of tension. So I'm sure she was encouraged to try to put in and find those moments in her life that were tough decisions. But like, I don't know. Like, people like their dogs, okay? And very, very few people can imagine a dog being a little bit out of control, maybe even a lot out of control, and having the answer be, I'm going to take it in the back and shoot it. I'm not overstating that, am I? I mean, I know I'm not particularly involved in farm life, but you tell me. Noam defends her controversial decision to shoot her dog. I can understand why some people are upset. She said, it's a 20-year-old story about Cricket, one of the working dogs at a ranch. She says, there were good days and bad days, painful decisions, lessons learned. What I learned from public service, especially leading South Dakota through COVID, is people are looking for leaders who are authentic, willing to learn from the past, and don't shy away from their tough challenges. My hope is anyone reading this book will have an understanding that I always work to make the best decisions I can for the people in my life. The fact is, South Dakota law states that dogs who attack and kill livestock can be put down. Given that Cricket has shown aggressive behavior toward people by biting them, I decided to do what I did. Whether running the ranch or in politics, I've never passed, blah, 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 blah. Basically, you can see the point she's trying to make. Hey, this was a tough decision. I didn't want to do it, but she kind of does say that she didn't hit, like, the dog. But, you know, it's a tough decision. I did it because it had to be done. She says, we love animals, but tough decisions like this happen all the time on a farm. Sadly, we just had to put down 3 horses a few weeks ago and had been in our family for 25 years. If you want more real, honest, politically incorrect stories, that'll have the media gasping, pre-order, not going back. So she's trying to sell some books. I get it. I don't know if adding on more dead animal stories is necessarily the right play in that spot, but like, there is an argument there of like, hey, the farm is a different life, right? I've heard stories from people. They're putting their hands in places I don't want to think about. They're having to do all sorts of weird stuff to animals. I don't know. I've seen some dead. I've heard stories of dead animals. You got to put all that stuff sounds totally foreign to me, frankly. I'm coddled. I completely admit it. I understand that society probably doesn't operate for very long without our farmers, and they do a great job, and they have a totally different way of looking at this. But I mean, that's not the point here. The point is not necessarily what farm life is like. The point is, as a politician, especially someone who is supposedly going to get on the ticket, as a do-no-harm type of candidate, you have to recognize that not everyone understands farm life. If that's farm life, people don't recognize farm life. They don't live farm life. This is not the 1800s. They don't understand these things, okay? You know what my wife's reaction was to the squirrel dying? Utter and complete meltdown. Like, this is a dog, a family dog that your kid was expecting to see when they got home from the school bus. It's a big thing to a lot of people. I mean, think about Charlotte's Web for a second. One of my favorite movies of all time, Charlotte's Web. Charlotte's Web, I mean, there's a reason why people are in the movie rooting for Wilbur. Everyone knows where bacon comes from. Everyone knows where ham comes from. At some point, the farmer's like, sorry, like, this is why we got the stupid pig. We don't just, like pigs. They're here because they are serving the farm, and at some point, they're going to have, they're going to meet their untimely demise. Look, the kid cries. And you know what? Most adults feel the same way because they're not in that world. Maybe if you're working at a slaughterhouse every day, this is the type of thing that doesn't bother you. But the same way, like if you're working on murder scenes, you go to a murder investigation, and there's a lot of blood on the walls, you don't really think all that much about it. If you are working on cadavers every day, maybe this stuff doesn't disturb you, but it is your, if you are a cadaver, if you are working at a funeral home and you're running for vice president of the United States, you need to recognize that not everyone goes into a funeral home every day, right? Like, you need to recognize that maybe a grisly murder scene is not something that everybody else is going to understand. You have to be able to, first of all, probably not tell anybody about that. But also, if you're going to tell them, you have to somehow make the case that's going to make it understandable. And honestly, I just don't think that people, when they think of their dogs, can ever imagine doing these things. Now, look, every once in a while, there is a dog that gets is so far out of control. And what from what she describes in the story, doesn't sound like this dog was particularly at that level. But there are dogs that attack human beings viciously, right? And some of them do get put down. But generally speaking, they're put down in, you drop them off at the pound, or they go to a vet or whatever, and then it goes down in a totally different way. You might say, what's the freaking difference, right? And I get that. But if you think, what's the freaking difference, you might not be connected to all the other millions of dog owners out there who can't imagine doing something like this themselves. I was talking to a friend of mine who has chickens at his house, and one of the chickens died. And, you know, the family was a little perturbed about this. As I imagine the chickens, the family that had a Cricket attack their chickens felt as well. But, like, they all eat chicken. They all, I mean, it's not necessarily that we don't understand that sometimes these things occur. Most people don't want to be involved in the process. Now, look, as I'll spare you my vegetarian nonsense. But like, you know, like there is a disconnect there, right? It's a known disconnect from people who don't want to necessarily think about this. They like the result of the nugget, don't want to really think of the process. That's kind of normal for people. But it's something, again, recognizing normal is something you need to do when you're running for office, especially as a do-no-harm type of vice presidential candidate. If you think about, like, this is happening on the left all the time. They're in these rooms all the time talking about how gender doesn't matter and all this crazy stuff. And then they just come out and blurt it out, and the American people are like, what the hell are you talking about? It's very similar to something like this, okay? It's like you have a bunch of people around you that you might relate to, these stories might make sense to. And then you kind of leak them out to the wider public, and everyone's like, what the hell are you talking about? I mean, George Costanza saying he pees in the shower all the time. You know, I don't know. Everyone was like, no, we don't pee in the shower at all, George. What are you talking about? That is a kind of thing that you need to understand. You need to understand where your audience is. Now, Noam, of course, her vice presidential odds have plunged after this. Previously holding a 10% probability of securing the VP slot. Mrs. Noam has seen her odds drop to just 4%, says Newsweek. You got to love this, though. I mean, you think the media is desperate for angles? Here we go. Trump famously hates dogs. CNN anchor floats shocking Noam puppy murder story as a suck up to Trump. So Trump has never had a dog, not a huge pet guy. So the theory is that Kristi Noam told the story of killing her dog so that Donald Trump would like her more. Hey, maybe. Look, in the situation, like, it, you know, J.D. Vance, Vivek Ramaswamy, you're out there on TV, attack. You have more leeway on this stuff. Kristi Noam, who has a lot of things going for her, she's smart. She's done a lot of things. She was beloved by the conservative right during COVID. That fell away with some decisions she's made. She really had a real quick reversal. She was the most conservative governor really through COVID, arguably really put no restrictions on whatsoever. Even some of the, you know, someone like Ron DeSantis had some for a limited time. She was even more, people were praising her like crazy. Then she made some decision on, I think it was women's sports and gender stuff, and fell away very quickly for Kristi Noam. But like, there's things to like about Kristi Noem, and I think she was a real leader, one of the top five, let's say, for Trump's VP pick. But your job is not to add scandals to the campaign. I mean, Donald Trump's got enough going on right now. He doesn't need to be dealing with dead dog stories, okay? So it just doesn't, I mean, one of your assets is to be able to see these things coming. And the fact that she couldn't see that coming, which seemingly anyone on her staff had to tell her, I don't know if you want to tell that story. I mean, you might be a South Dakota farmer, and that's great. South Dakota farmers are awesome. They're doing all sorts of amazing things for the country, I'm sure. But, like, you have to understand that not everyone is a South Dakota farmer. And a story like that is not going to relate all that well. And I will say, that probably kills her VP slot chances. Maybe. I mean, you never know. Donald Trump can kind of walk through any wall he wants to, it seems like. But all this does is open up the window for just a tad of Bergamentum. Uh-huh, that's right. Doug Burgum is now moved up Trump's VP ladder. Didn't even make the list, by the way, on the list I showed you at the beginning. Now, Bergamentum is bordering on Bergamania. Okay, we're almost to Bergamania. Trump apparently likes him. Again, another do-no-harm type. Likes the fact that he's very wealthy. Likes the fact that he's, built a big business. Could Doug Burgum and his eyebrows be the VP choice? I don't know. He strikes me as a cabinet secretary type, frankly. It doesn't strike me as a VP. We will see. But there's so much to go over, and we'll keep doing that as we get more. I don't know. Do you think this does? Leave it in the comments. Does this kill Kristi Noem's chances to be VP? I'm interested in what you think about that. And I'll ask Pat Gray as well. He's coming up next. This spring, the best box you will open up all month is from Bespoke Post and their new seasonal lineup of must-have Box of Awesome collections. The Box of Awesome is, you get one of these every month, filled with carefully chosen gear from the best small brands around the world. A lot of them you won't even know. You never even heard of the brands. I got this, I'm going into a Little League season right now. It means I'm outside all the time, constantly. And this from Ren. I didn't know Ren was even a brand. But Ren made this, and this is a cooler bag. And this is the perfect thing to bring when to a Texas Little League field when it's 175 degrees out. Because you pop this on, you bring it in, you can get a bunch of drinks, and maybe some snacks, a sandwich or something for the kid in between games. You get all that going on. And that's just, I didn't even know this brand existed. It's a great bag. To get started, all you got to do is take the quiz at boxofawesome.com. The answers basically help direct you to the right Box of Awesome for you. It's free to join. They release new items all the time. You can cancel anytime you want. They make this super easy. It's a great gift, by the way. Great gift. So make sure you check that out. Get a great mystery gift as well with your first monthly shipment when you sign up at boxofawesome.com. Enter the code STU at checkout. It's boxofawesome.com. Get a free mystery gift. If you use the code STU, why wouldn't you want the free mystery gift? I mean, what kind of decision is that? It's boxofawesome.com. The code is STU. I'm joined once again by Pat Gray, host of Pat Gray Unleashed. It's right here on Blaze TV. And of course, he is the purveyor of the wonderful Kexi cookies, the most delicious cookies you're ever going to taste. You can get those at Kexi.com. Pat, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here, Stu.
It's great to have you. And have you thought about sending some Kexi cookies to the college protests, maybe to kind of smooth it over? I think when people are eating Kexi cookies, they get happy. Maybe they wouldn't be so upset about all the genocide going on in Israel.
Yeah, well, I mean, if anything could fix the genocide, I think it's the cookies.
Is that a new slogan brewing right there?
It is. Uh-huh. But no, strangely, I haven't thought about sending them anything except, probably negative vibes. Yeah, I'm big into the negative vibes for them. I'm not very happy with them right now, which is probably very surprising.
Yeah, I am shocked about it. I'm sure they would be as well. Now, it's interesting. What's your take on this overall? Because I don't think I understand it. My understanding of how the United States works, right, and the world works, is that at no point does a college administration have any power over whether Israel goes to war or not. I don't know if I'm disconnected and I don't understand how things really are in the real world.
Isn't it? It's like any connection at all that they hear about that the college has with Israel, then they're protesting that connection, I guess. Like, but I mean, if the dean of the school has ever been to Israel, they're going to protest that.
Yeah.
If, you know, they're planning a trip, a pilgrimage to Israel, they're going to protest because you're thinking about Israel. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. And I don't understand. It's more than them sympathizing now with the Palestinians. They are actually sympathizing with Hamas. Mm-hmm. And they don't care about what happened on October 7th at all. And they mock it if you bring it up. All they care about is shutting down Israel and talking about killing Jews.
Is it really true, bizarre, though, that they don't care about October 7th? Is that right? Because they seem to be cheering it on. They seem to be excited about what happened on October 7th.
Yes, they don't care about it in a we don't mind that it happened.
Right.
In fact, we're kind of happy that it happened, and it should probably happen again, sort of way.
What do you think the split is between, okay, you have people who are anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, hate Jews, love Hamas, love socialism, love communism, all those groups, those real activists. And then you kind of just have college idiots, right? Who, I mean, we've seen a couple of them who they don't even know why they're there. They don't know what the protest is. What is the split there, do you think?
You mean public at large compared to?
I was thinking of like the protests. Like, are these people really? I mean, is this a, because I mean, if 100% of these people are supporting Hamas, we have a massive terrorism problem on our hands, right? Yeah. If this is mostly college idiots going along for the ride, maybe it doesn't, it's not
I hope it's
serious.
Just college idiots, but there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shocking amount. It's an incredible number. You might expect 10 people out on a street corner doing that in years past, but when we're seeing thousands and thousands, and it's across the country, it's pretty alarming. It's concerning.
Does it surprise you that these numbers are possible for something like this? I mean, October 7th was one of the most gruesome events that we've ever experienced in our lifetimes, right? Like, this is horrific in every way. And the fact that just a few months afterwards, we have people out there cheering it on openly in public, many of which have been caught on camera. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised that the numbers?
Very. Yeah, it's incredible. And the blatant hatred for Jews that they're not even trying to disguise or cover up in any way. Like over the weekend, they were chanting, kill all the Jews.
It's pretty clear. They're not hiding that one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not subtle. And so, I've been really shocked by it. And I don't, like you, don't understand how we got here to this point. Other than they seem to be susceptible to every ultra-left-wing cause that comes along. Mm-hmm. Whether that's climate change, abortion, killing Jews, whatever, they pick up on that cause.
It's interesting that the support, going against, essentially, Israel in this situation is so different than what's going on with Ukraine, where all these people seemingly mm-hmm. love the fact that the Ukraine is getting funding from the U.S. government. Mm-hmm. He's not being called Genocide Joe for killing Russians, right?
No, right.
Where's the disconnect there? Are you, you think you'd be like just anti-war. A lot of these people would be like anti-war protesters. You'd at least kind of understand. Mm-hmm. There's just no coherent ideology here other than I don't like Jews very much.
Yeah, and it seems to be permeating the Democrat Party, too, who used to be doves, right? They used to be all about peace. And we don't want to go to Iraq. We don't want to go to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
We don't want war in the Middle East. Now they're all about it. I mean, they love it. They can't get enough of it.
Yeah.
They want to fund it completely and keep it going and keep it boiling and continue to stir that pot over there. Mm. It's amazing.
It is amazing. The White House is now planning on limiting Biden's graduation speeches. Can you imagine him right now trying to do a graduation speech? I mean, any speech he does is already pathetic, but imagine how many times he would be interrupted on campus. Campus is, of course, going through these protests. They're avoiding that. And this is, I don't ever feel bad for Joe Biden because Joe Biden is a terrible president. He's hurt the country dramatically. But, like, I do feel like he's getting a little bit of a bad rap here from the left-wing perspective on this whole Israel thing. I feel like he's been absolutely anti-Israel throughout this process. Why are they not giving him a break on this?
I don't know. There's no pleasing the left. You know, they're so extreme. They're even too extreme for the extreme president we have right now. And really, he's given lip service to Israel, but he's also bolstered the Palestinians and Hamas a great deal by tying the hands of Netanyahu and Israel in their response to this thing. There is no way they should be stopping until they destroy Hamas. There's no way. And yet, they've pretty much forced him into, pushed him right up against the wall in this latest ceasefire effort, which looks like it might be happening here pretty soon.
We saw the comments from President Biden where he basically did the very fine people on both sides comment.
Basically.
I mean, it was almost identical in a very similar situation, except it was left-wing people saying they didn't like Jews instead of supposedly right-wing people saying they didn't like Jews. The inconsistency by the media here is fascinating to me. The protesters are very upset about perhaps having their photos taken. Maybe this is leaked to future employers. They're like, the media is right on board with them, saying, I can't believe anyone would do that to these poor children in college. Yet, when it was Charlottesville, we talked about this on radio a little bit today. One guy, Cole White, was at the Charlottesville rally. I don't know. If you're going to that rally, probably not great. Especially if you're participating in the bad things that were said there. They tracked him across the country. They took photos of him. They tracked him across the country, got him fired from a hot dog stand. And it was cheered on overwhelmingly by the media.
Well, they loved it.
Anti-Semitism seems to be okay if you have a particular policy background on that.
Yeah, it's the double standard and the hypocrisy is just... I mean, it's painful to mention because it comes up so often.
I know. You almost feel
like
bad bringing it up.
So much. Yeah. Okay, I shouldn't be. Yeah, okay, it's a double standard again.
It is really bad. All right, I have one more thing for you. This one I'm excited about because you had a big part in this.
Yeah.
Yes, Foreigner.
Oh.
Foreigner.
Thank you for noticing.
Finally going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame after many, many years. Something.
It's been a decades-long effort.
Something you're directly responsible for, I would argue. Pat Gray.
I would argue that too.
I mean, seriously.
Been out there pushing for a long time. Finally got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame guy who had some influence at the hall last, I think it was March, pinned him down on Foreigner.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. We pinned him. We said, okay, look, why is Foreigner not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? We understand they haven't even come up with the selection committee, let alone be nominated. And he was actually shocked by that and said, yeah, you're right. You know, you're right. And I think he went back and reported to the committee. And look what happened.
I mean, now they're in.
Now they're
in. I mean, this is huge. You've legitimately been talking about this on national radio for 10 years. Yes. As long as I can remember you being on the Glenn Beck program and beyond into Pat Gray Unleashed. And, of course, Pat and Stu as well. A lot of Foreigner talk over the years.
Yes.
Now, I did notice this is from Vulture, is the publication. They say, Foreigner's hot-blooded rock hall campaign paid off. And nowhere in this are you mentioned.
It's criminal.
It is criminal.
It's criminal.
Mark Ronson, which I guess is he's related to someone from Foreigner.
Yeah, I think he's Mick Jones' stepson.
Yes, Mick Jones' stepson apparently was doing this. And, of course, I can understand how he would be mentioned. They also mentioned Dave Grohl / Jack Black and Flea. And then nowhere in this group you obviously belong is Pat Gray.
Right. I know.
I mean, are you ready to get corrections to these articles?
It's criminal. I'm going to sue.
You're going to sue?
I'm going to sue.
You're going to sue Vulture?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I have seen a lot of articles saying, like, this was a big campaign. And seriously, you should absolutely have been mentioned in this.
I know, right? I know. I think, but here's what happened. I think we got him nominated. I think that his stepson helped get him inducted. Because he did go around to all these huge groups, Paul McCartney included. He's not a group, but a pretty big name.
Pretty big name in the world of music.
And McCartney did, you know, what, five words on it or something. Foreigner's not in the Rock and Roll. Okay, it's more than five. Foreigner's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What the F?
That's all he said. And that's enough
and
for him to get
mentioned
in story after story after story.
Yeah.
Yet your thousands of hours of programming on this topic are
nothing.
not... are not mentioned. Nothing. Well, I mean, I hope the lawsuits go well.
Yeah.
Because you deserve to win them.
Thank you.
Foreigner in the Hall of Fame, directly responsible, Mr. Pat Gray from Pat Gray Unleashed. He's right here on Blaze TV. And head over there to watch the show on YouTube, Blaze TV, of course, as well. And order Kexi cookies because they're freaking delicious. Get them at Kexi.com, K-E-K-S-I.com. Pat, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Thank you, Stu.
When you absolutely, positively have to buy or sell a home, you got to go to realestateagentsitrust.com. Why? You need a good agent, not a crappy one. You got to have someone who's on your side, whether you're buying or selling a home, no matter where you are in the country. They have people almost everywhere, as Glenn says. They're not everywhere because sometimes they can't find the agent that hits their qualifications. This happens from time to time, but they have a lot of agents that can, probably in your area. Check it out, realestateagentsitrust.com. They know the lay of the land. They know the best business practices. They know the markets. They know, you know, everything about real estate that you don't know, because I don't know much. All I know is I want to live there. And that's not always enough. Realestateagentsitrust.com. The name kind of says it all. It's a free service to you, by the way. So why not take advantage of it? Realestateagentsitrust.com. And then when you buy, you get the house, a little welcoming present. They should send you some Kexi cookies. I'm just saying, I'm just throwing that out there. Realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. Let's talk about Jim Biden for a moment, shall we? Now, Jim Biden sounds just like an alter ego of Joe Biden, like when he's committing crimes.
That was Jim.
But no, it's actually his brother. And Jim Biden, I've said this for years, that tons and tons of scandals are around Jim Biden. But Jim Biden is not like Hunter Biden. He doesn't have interesting scandals. He has run-of-the-mill massive corruption that is going on constantly around Jim Biden, and no one pays attention to it because, you know, Hunter's smoking crack on camera, understandably. But he's got another issue here. Fund managers indicate Jim Biden was in business with Qatari officials. Alleged arrangements would be some of the closest known links between a Biden relative and a foreign government. The details are lengthy, and it would make a great documentary. The problem is no one would watch it because it'd be like, it's about Jim Biden. It's going to be a boring documentary. Now, I will say this. A very good documentary, a very interesting documentary, would be The Life and Times of Afro Man. Someone make this documentary. If you remember Afro Man, he was an artist, a rapper, who had a song called Because I Got High that was popular many years ago. Since you may have tuned him out, he was then raided by police. He went on social media to complain about the raid, then got sued by the police because he was complaining on social media about the raid. Then he got all fired up about all this and decided to run for president. He's currently a candidate for president. Now, my understanding is he's not winning yet. Okay, but that could be right around the corner. And I will say, none of the polls I've looked at have included Afro Man as a possible candidate. So maybe if they did, he'd be ahead. I don't know. But he's trying to drum up some interest, some juice for his campaign. And he released a new song. This is a Afro Man releasing Because I Got High remix featuring Hunter Biden parody. Now, I've never heard an artist parody their own song before. This is not like Weird Al doing it, an Afro Man song. This is Afro Man parodying an Afro Man song, but it's pretty solid. Listen.
He was gonna get his laptop fixed, but Hunter got high. He wasn't gonna show all them pics, but Hunter got high. He should have let Hillary bleach his whole hard drive. Why, yeah, hey, Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high. He wasn't gonna mess with the hoes, but Hunter got high. He was gonna take them all out on the boat, but Hunter got high. He's the smartest man Joe ever knew in his life. Why, yeah, hey, till Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high. La, da, 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 da. He was gonna go visit his dad, but Hunter got high. Ooh. He thought he had a secret stash, but Hunter got high. La, da, da, da. The White House got shut down. We all know why.
Come on, man.
Yeah, hey, Hunter got high. Hunter got high. Hunter got high.
I mean, if he's not at least in your consideration now for your presidential vote, I don't know what more the man can do. So AfroManForPresident.com, I believe, is the website. Check it out. I believe you can donate. I don't think you can donate, drugs to the campaign, but, you can donate money and he can buy the drugs if he'd like to. Back in a second. Have you noticed the markets have been a little bit crazy lately? Now, maybe you're getting close to retirement. Maybe you're thinking about the future. You maybe have a wealth advisor and you're not happy with them. You maybe got a couple $100,000. You're trying to figure out how to grow that money towards your future. Well, Constitution Wealth is the Patriot's choice in wealth management. What does that mean? Well, if you're the type of person who's like, I'm not going to buy Bud Light. I don't like what they're doing. I'm not going to go to Disney movies anymore. I don't like what they're doing. Well, why are you investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in funds that do all invest in those things? It's a lot more important to take out your investment money from those companies than it is to just avoid a six-pack. Constitution Wealth can help you with that entire process. They've got a solid business investment plan that can help you gain money and make sure you have the retirement money that you need in your later years. But also, you can help fight the culture war. You can help work on the sort of parallel economy by working with an investment firm that's comprised of real professionals who are patriots like you. They understand the way you think. Most people don't, I swear, in some of these industries. Constitution Wealth can help you with this. Why work with anyone else? Go to ConstitutionWealth.com, ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze, ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. Get a free consultation today. It's ConstitutionWealth.com/Blaze. Some good news and bad news for Ford. Good news is they made $7,300 per vehicle on each of the 400,000 vehicles it sold after accounting for expenditures. They got $1,400 each for the $600,000 it sold under the same conditions. They also were making electric vehicles, and that didn't go quite as well. In fact, every one they sold, they lost $130,000. Now, none of their electric vehicles cost $130,000, which is an incredible feat, but they sold 10,000 EVs and lost $1.3 billion on the process. So good job, everybody. This is going really, really well. Their gas-powered cars doing absolutely fine. EVs getting absolutely slaughtered. Just part of the green religion that we all have come to know and love. By the way, Don Lemon, who is... he's making religious comments as well. Don Lemon says DEI has gone too far in the media. It has become a religion, which is an interesting perspective from him because the only reason he had a show for all of those years was DEI. He obviously was terrible on the air and had horrible ratings the entire time, but we were supposed to be, I guess his diversity was his strength in that particular sense. And he's, you know, every once in a while we'll fire off this thing that kind of sounds sane. It's just so rare that no one really wants to pay attention. And finally, speaking of that that religion of DEI, this is a fascinating story. The Daily Beast, which is just a crap heap of a site, has this perspective. Robert Downey Jr. is a little too good at playing a racist on The Sympathizer because I guess because he's playing a racist, he should be bad at it. It shows his inner racism. Because he's a good actor and showing himself as a racist on the show. This is what acting is. You're supposed to be able to pull off something that you're not. If it was just you acting like you, acting would be very, very easy. However, it's not. And Robert Downey Jr. is a good actor. And he can act like someone he doesn't agree with, right? There's no reason to believe he's a racist. But I guess now we have to do that because DEI, right? We are in the idea where... We're in this sort of world where these media sources are so completely insane. And a headline like that can get written and not get you fired. But that's where we are today. So buckle up, everybody. I'm not going to talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner because who cares? But I will say John Fetterman went to it. And I wanted to give you his outfit for the event. Here it is. This is a hoodie with... a bow tie and a rose. I don't know. I mean, Fetterman's annoying me because he's saying things that are like true and stuff. So I don't know what to think about him anymore. Now all of a sudden I like the hoodie thing. I don't know. I'm flip-flopping. It's just embarrassing. We'll see you tomorrow.